Well, obviously, we're back at it.
Victor to Mo Baker from three in the wing. Got it!
I can't hear myself. This is Cameron Indoor Stadium West. It's unbelievable.
Good night, Vienna. Pistol firing. Luka's three-point jumper. Good! Cowboys win! Cowboys win! Oh, the Cowboys are going to the Final Four! Oh, the Cowboys are going to the Final Four!
Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. It is a Wednesday. We are back at it. Kyle, do you like the new open for our podcast?
I do. It's good. I showed her some out to Mrs. Pistols, and she made fun of me. But but no, it's great. You were concerned that I wouldn't like the beat that is that comes on after Gundy talks, but I love it. That goes back to I think when we were in college, maybe.
I think that was 2011 season when Wheaton and Blackman were getting going.
Oh no, I'm thinking of, you know what they used to play is
the
Bring 'Em Out. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The We Ready thing. I remember Vernon Grant running around to the We Ready. What did your wife make fun of you for?
She
sports nerd.
Not make fun of. She just laughed at the Gundy back at it thing. She thought.
Yeah, that was a must. I had to have that to start it off.
It was perfect. That's we've kind of adopted that.
Yeah, it's a way of life, really.
How would you rank? I mean, is that's got to be number one in terms of Gundyisms for you? Doesn't
well, it's the most consistent. Like, it's as consistent as the sun rising in the east. Like, we're back at it. It's like a involuntary tick he has. Like, he has to say that before he moves on to anything else. Of all my Gundyisms, I'd have to go down the list, but calling guys by their number is high on the list.
Yeah,
especially since he can't get names right, which we'll talk about. But I think mature is pretty high on the list.
accurate,
two syllables. Accurate. We'd have to. That's a whole separate podcast. We'll have to make an official list on that.
Yeah, I think that might be a blog post. I think one of my favorites that you pointed out and that I've noticed, and he did it. He did it after the spring game, actually, last week. Ogbaugh.
That one's the best. That one might be the best. Ogbaugh. It's like a big ball at the end. Instead of Ogba, like everyone else, Ogbaugh.
it's really funny.
It's great. It's great. There's so many great pronunciations. Gundy is like such an Oklahoman through and through that I love it. Like people think I'm making fun of him. Like, I talk very similarly, just not as exaggerated as him, because I'm from Oklahoma as well.
Maybe you will when you're 48 or whatever he is.
I might just start calling people by their numbers as well once I get up there. So I'm too old for this.
You'd have to call people by, like, you'd have to get their, like, either their phone number or their, like, the last four of their social. Like, you could just start just 1938.
Yeah. I like it. Did you watch the spring game?
No, I did not. I was recovering from my master's hangover. Did not watch the spring game. I heard, or I saw, that I did not miss a whole lot. Were you there?
No, I was in at the Thunder game, playing the Dallas Mavericks game one. I was watching the Thunder win by like 38 points. I guess the spring game was way before that, but I was, you know, I got to the arena way early because we had shows all day. But I missed the spring game, and it doesn't sound like I missed much. Were they broadcasting it on YouTube? Is that where it was?
I'm not even sure. It's kind of embarrassing. I was actually thinking about that.
You were pulling pictures of like Gundy's hair and stuff. Where was that from?
I did do that. That was a Twitter video, I think.
Okay.
Or maybe a YouTube video or something. I don't think it was broadcast on YouTube. I think we do a poor job on the side of covering the spring game. Kyle Boone went and did a good job of writing his thoughts on it, but there's a great Ohio State site called 11 Warriors that I've sort of modeled PFB after, and they had like literally 20 posts on their spring game, and they had like they had 101,000 people there. I was like, this is a little different than Stillwater, you know, like it's just. It's never really felt like a huge deal, and I've also not made that big of a deal out of it. So I don't know. How much stock do you put in spring games?
Well, it used to be a much bigger deal before the Thunder were here. Like, I remember when Sam Bradford was going for the starting job in Norman, and and Gundy was taking over. Like it used to be a much bigger deal because there was literally nothing else going on.
Yeah.
And I thought even way back then they were a complete waste of time because it's not even a real football game. You can't hit anybody. I do think Gundy had a much better format than they did down at OU because people were actually allowed to tackle. But I've never really put too much stock in the spring games at all. But I will say this. You can't learn certain things. I learned that Brandon Weeden was a better quarterback than Alex Kate just by watching the spring game. I'm not even saying that jokingly.
Yeah, no, like
he outplayed him every spring game, and it backed up what we ended up seeing on the field. And right. So I think there are things you can glean from spring games, but again, I don't put a whole lot of stock into them. And Ohio State did have 100,000, OSU had 17, so that just kind of shows you the difference in importance level.
Yeah, and that might have been an air quote 17 because
probably.
It did not look like there were 17,000 there. I think we learned – what did we learn? I think that the quarterback situation is super interesting to me, and this is probably the first time I can't remember the last time Oklahoma State had an issue with their backup quarterback because it's always been the starting quarterback, but you've kind of known – that the other guy was going to be the backup, or like last year you knew J.W. Walsh was going to be the backup. Like there hasn't been a QB2 race, I don't think. I'm just going off the top of my head, in a while, and you kind of have one this year. How do you think that's going to play out?
Well, I didn't give our man Oil Baron.
The Oil Baron. People were wondering where that nickname comes from.
I mean, I understand why they don't. Every time I type it on Twitter, I'm like, someone's not going to understand this. But his name is literally from like 1900s oil country. Like he's probably Taylor Cornelius the Eighth, and he's a walk-on. I think he still is a walk-on. Correct?
He is. Yes.
He doesn't have a scholarship, correct. So I think he was pretty much forgotten in the backup quarterback race. Like everyone assumed it would be Kohler or Kolar. I'm not sure how Gundy pronounces it, but everyone kind of assumed to be him because he's a really good quarterback at Norman North, and you got the Wood T kid coming in from high school. But it looked like Cornelius was the best player on the field at quarterback. I mean, I know Rudolph wasn't asked to do too much, and he did score a rushing touchdown. But it looked like the player of the game was our man Oil Baron.
Yeah, it did. I mean, he was throwing some dimes. He threw a ball to Chris Lacy, a touchdown that was it was awesome. It was
dare I say that was a seed?
It was a seed. It was impressive. And somebody brought up a good point because we kind of talked about this on the blog yesterday, and I can't remember who said this, and I'm sorry, but somebody brought up the point that your backup quarterback might not necessarily be the same guy that is the quarterback that plays often. And what I mean by that is you might, like we saw in the past, you might see Oklahoma State take Rudolph out inside the 10, inside the 5, whatever, and bring in a Wood T or a Kolar, but those guys might not actually be the backup quarterback. It might be if Rudolph goes down, the Oil Baron comes in and actually plays quarterback. You might just have different packages for different guys. So that would be another interesting route because you're starting to kind of pile up the QBs here, are you not? You're bringing in Woodsy, you're bringing in Nick Burns. You've got already a 2017 guy committed. I mean, how many – I think all those guys think that they're going to be able to play and play early, and there's only one QB spot, you know? So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
It is, and I do think Gundy and the rest of the coaches in the Big 12 are learning you need more than two quarterbacks mm-hmm. based on injury. Everyone got hurt last year. And I think, too, if I'm a coach, I'm bringing in that many and just letting it sort itself out. The guy who ends up at the bottom of that list will probably transfer. But in the end, you get to basically try all these guys out and decide who's the ones that can actually play. And so I like it from Mike Gundy's perspective. Now, it'll be interesting to see what happens once they come out with a depth chart with them. They have all these guys on campus, who will stay, who will go. Because inevitably, someone's going to leave. That's just a fact. That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
But if they try to do the Walshing machine, the goal line package again, Mason Rudolph might pull a Conor McGregor and just be like, I'm out. See you guys later. don't you agree? Like, Mason Rudolph is saying, give me the damn ball, and I'm going to go score.
Yeah. It's so tough because Rudolph is a guy who I think has kind of proven that can run a little bit. I mean, he's not Walsh, but had a rushing touchdown in the spring game. He's not easy to bring down, but you also don't want him running. And so if you want to continue to do those things, you sort of have to take him. I'm with you. I don't think they will take him out. I think he's going to – I mean, I think they're all in every play, every snap with number two. But I don't think that John Kolar is going to get snaps at the goal line when OSU is playing Texas down 7 with like 6 minutes.
You don't think Keandre Woodtie is going to get subbed in there?
I don't think that's going to happen.
No. If that happened, Rudolph would walk into Gundy's office like on the scene from Rudy and just lay his jersey on the desk and be like, I'm going to A&M. I'm going to go take Trevor Knight's job.
I'm going back to South Carolina.
Oh yeah, he can go coach, play for Muschamp.
You got Clemson. Wasn't Clemson recruiting him?
Yeah, or they should have been if they weren't.
My gosh. I mean, they're fine, obviously.
But yeah, they're okay.
He's. I still think we're underrating Mason Rudolph.
I do too.
Am I allowed to say? I think he's a great college quarterback. I don't know.
He had zero help last year, and that kind of goes back to what you asked. You know, can we learn anything from the spring game? I'm still concerned about the running game. I didn't see anything to give anyone any optimism when it comes to running the football. And if that's the case again, I think OSU is going to struggle, and I think Rudolph's going to be put on an island again, much like he was in the Sugar Bowl, where it's basically all on him to make anything happen whatsoever. And that's obviously the biggest storyline for OSU moving forward is, can they run the ball just in the slightest?
Well, and the kind of the quotes you've gotten out of the spring have been, I would compare the Oklahoma State offensive line to the Texas quarterback situation, that we keep hearing about how, oh, this year it's, you know, this time it's going to be good. Like, we're good now. Like, here are the reasons why. And it's like, if you were actually going to be that good, I don't know that you would be giving me all these reasons why. You know, like, you would just go out and be good. And we haven't seen it, you know. And maybe we will. Maybe it'll come around by September. But, you know, Gundy's talking up Chris Carson, and Barry Sanders is coming in. And we've got 7 guys on the line that can play and transfers. And it's like, well, okay. I'll believe it when I see it. Like, I believe Texas has a good quarterback whenever I see it. So I'm with you. I don't know. It's certainly, I think, the focal point of concern, along with maybe a little bit of depth on the defensive side. But they've got some stuff to figure out if they want to be better than a 10-win team last year or this year.
Yeah, and I do think Gundy made a smart move by bringing in some JUCO guys, some guys who can theoretically play right away. So that'll be something to watch for. Kyle, I'm looking at Taylor Cornelius's bio right now.
Tell me about it.
Direct quote: comes from a remarkably athletic family that includes 1996 gold medal winning swimmer Josh Davis, who's his cousin, NFL defensive end Brandon Green, another cousin who was drafted by the Jaguars and played for the Rams and Seahawks, and Casey Bookout, another cousin who was a standout baseball player at Oklahoma.
Wait, his cousin is Casey Bookout?
He's cousins with an Olympic swimmer, an NFL defensive end, and Casey Bookout.
Is Casey Bookout related to Kevin, I'm assuming?
Yeah, that's his brother. They both played baseball at OU, and we all know what Kevin did in basketball as well.
So Taylor Cornelius, I've actually forgotten what his last name is now that I've used Cornelison so many times. But
Well, we got to talk about that too, but yeah, go ahead.
Taylor Cornelius is related to Kevin Bookout is what you're telling me.
Basically, yeah. He could be a double agent from OU.
Well, I think so. I kind of read about him, and Kyle Fredrickson did a good story in the Oklahoman about him. And his high school coach named his son after Taylor Cornelius after he graduated.
Does that make him Taylor Cornelius the ninth?
Well, I mean, his last name is not Cornelius, obviously.
Well, his name could be Taylor Cornelius whatever. Whatever the guy's last name is.
But I mean, high praise all the way around, and Yurcich said this after the spring game. He basically said the kids got some stones for coming to a Big 12 school and being like, "Yeah, I'm gonna play." Like, because he could have gone. He was really good. I think he's from Abilene or Amarillo, excuse me.
Amarillo, yeah.
And he was really good in high school and could have played somewhere, but he's like, "No, I'm gonna go play at Oklahoma State." And now maybe he is. I don't know. I mean. We haven't really seen him. I mean, I think he played against Kansas last year. We haven't really seen him in a real game. But yeah, I'm interested because, if you look at the last 5 years since, or I guess the last 4 years since Whedon was here, the backup quarterback and or QB2 and QB1 have basically thrown the same amount of passes because of injuries, because of a variety of different things. So that QB2 spot is super important, and it might be the oil burn.
Well, remember when we had David Glidden on, you asked, like, who throws, you know, the best ball not named Mason Rudolph, and he immediately said Taylor Cornelius.
Yeah, that's a great...
So maybe he's got some actual, you know, ability. And remember when they burned Rudolph's red shirt? It came down to Taylor Cornelius.
Yeah.
They were like, well, we can't play Taylor Cornelius. I think that's partly why you and I just wrote him off.
Yeah.
Because they basically... you know, burned Rudolph's red shirt because they didn't want to play him. But
I'm still that decision will. I mean, that's one of the great what ifs, isn't it?
Flipped the script on OSU football for a year.
Yeah, the entire organization. Mm-hmm. I mean, the entire athletic department. I'm not trying to overstate that, but you know, it's so crazy how much playing Mason Rudolph and him winning Bedlam in 2014 changed the trajectory of the Oklahoma State Athletic Department. It's insane.
It's pretty crazy. That's a good what if. And
yeah.
Gundy, I guess, has learned his name now. Cornelius?
No, he still calls him Cornelson, I think.
Did he in the postgame quotes from the spring game? Because there was at least two or three instances where he called him Cornelson. He believed his name was Cornelson.
Well,
and then I was waiting to see the quotes after the spring game to see if he still called him that. I think he may have called him Cornelius now.
Maybe so. Maybe he called him 14. I don't know.
Well, it was almost like Gundy was sending a message to Cornelius. It's like, I know you think you got stones or whatever you said, but I'm going to call you Cornelson and put you in your place.
Apparently,
just to make him work a little harder. You know what I mean? Planting a little seed.
Apparently, he calls him Cornball. Somebody who told us that
had to be Glidden, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it was somebody else. But yeah,
I love that he called him Cornelson. It was just Pete Gundy.
Yeah, it was tremendous. Have you been following? Or do you have anything else on the spring game before we move on?
I think that's it.
Yeah, I think.
Raymond Taylor didn't
yes.
play.
Yes.
My boy Ray Tay.
Yeah. Pulled
one out for Ray Tay. What happened?
I don't know. I don't know what happened. He's not on the he wasn't on the roster. I mean, Oklahoma State does have what, 16 running backs, so
they?
It's not like they're well,
he was the best running back last year.
I know. I know he was. I don't know. There hasn't been any news. Somebody said he was spotted on Instagram still in an Oklahoma State gear.
Like Six Flags or something?
Six Flags. Yeah, that was it. Was that on Twitter? Where did I see that?
I don't know. I read it somewhere, you know. But yeah, there's rumors that he's just transferring. Maybe the writing was on the wall that he wouldn't get to play next year either. But
well,
I'm sad.
That's weird to me because
Ray Tay was one of my favorite guys.
And he was such a... you know, went to Kansas State, didn't play because he wanted to play at Oklahoma State, and now transferring because I don't know, something doesn't add up. It seems weird.
Yeah, I'm sad. I'm really sad.
Have you been following this Ricky Fowler thing?
I've been watching his Snapchat My Story and just shaking my head at what my life is compared to his and how much more fun he's having. And it really makes me sad and depressed that I won't live that life that Ricky Fowler's living on a boat, playing golf in his swimsuit with Jordan Spieth, just bro-ing it up.
I mean, they're bro-ing out of their minds. It's
pretty insane.
So, true story, I have a Snapchat account. I do not have the app on my phone. I don't understand it. You know, all the things.
It's not that complicated.
All the things you
Dad.
Would. Exactly. All the things you would expect from someone who has children. But yesterday, this Fowler story started to get so big and so, you know, interesting that I had to reinstall the app on my phone, and I legitimately could not. It took me 20 minutes to figure out how to follow Ricky Fowler. probably more than 20 minutes, actually. And Justin Thomas, who's also on the trip. And then I had to try to figure out how to pull video because there's this insane video. Maybe I'm the only one who thinks this is a big deal, but there's a video of Fowler, Justin Thomas, and Smiley Kaufman basically taunting Jordan Spieth for blowing the Masters. Have you seen this?
I saw the divot.
Yes.
The divot thing. I thought, and you're obviously right and I'm wrong, but I initially thought that Jordan, what's his name? Niebrugge, how the hell do you say his last name from OSU? I thought he was one of the guys. I think it might have been Smiley after all, but I thought when he said Jordan, you know, took a chunk out of the ground, I thought he was talking to Jordan Niebrugge, an OSU golfer, but apparently they were making fun of Spieth, and now Spieth's on the trip.
He's been on the trip. He was there.
He was there when they were mocking him?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I was...
That's cold-blooded.
I was texting with a golf buddy, and my buddy was like, I'm breaking this down like the Zapruder film. Like, I've watched it 10 times. Like, they have to be talking about Augusta. And they are. I mean, that's exactly what they're talking about. It's a little soon. I mean, it's only been 2 weeks, and not even since Spieth laid the sod over on that wedge on number 12. But
I mean, you got Smiley Kaufman wearing a Steph Curry jersey. Like, they're just growing it up. But the ribbing goes back and forth because I just watched one where Smiley Kaufman was driving, and I think it might have been Spieth yelling, "Final round of the Masters here," or something like that, making fun of his 81 or whatever he shot.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. There's one of Kaufman coming on camera and saying he's using the Konica Minolta swing hub vision cam, and that Spieth has been hooking balls into the water all day.
I mean, it's just... It makes me feel like my life is totally inconsequential to what they're doing.
You don't vacation on private planes in the Bahamas?
No, I don't. I don't go to the islands. I don't play golf in my chubbies. And it looks like a total frat move commercial for pro golfers.
And I think Justin Thomas stole Brandon Whedon's Stars and Stripes tank top.
Did he?
Yeah.
We got to get that back for Whedon.
Yeah, we do.
Whedon will probably be on the next Snapchat hanging out with Ricky. hitting golf balls with Masters champions.
He probably will. Well, there's only one Masters champion.
I mean, that's not plural, but you know what I mean.
Okay, do you want to talk about, because you've been following the Thunder pretty closely. I've not, but I'm sure people who are listening to this are interested. Do you want to talk about that, or should we talk a little Brad Underwood recruiting real quick?
We can talk Thunder. It was...
What happened in game two?
It was the most shocking result I can ever remember. I've covered the team since their first season, and at no point did I ever think they were losing the game until they lost it. Kevin Durant just went ice cold. And it's been a season-long issue with them giving up leads. They had like a 7-point lead with 6 minutes to go, and they scored like 2 buckets the rest of the way. It's just they rely so much on Kevin and Russell in the last 5 minutes that they don't play basketball. It just turns into Kevin and Russell go win the game. And when you're playing in the playoffs, when teams are in a series where they can gear everything around you and prepare for that, it just turns into the game of basketball is very simple. You watch the Spurs, you watch the Warriors, they pass it around, guys get open shots. It's a very simple game. But the Thunder make it seem like it's freaking rocket science sometimes. And just everything's difficult. And basically they laid an ostrich-sized egg. Now, I do think they will win the series in 5. I think they're going to win both in Dallas just because they're so much more talented. Like, the Mavericks weren't talented enough anyway, and now they're hurt. They don't have Parsons, they don't have Barea. They don't have several other guys, and Dirk's hurt. So it's just – it was a colossal-sized egg. And more than anything, it kills any optimism, I think, when they get in a tight game with the Warriors or even the Spurs for that matter.
What do you feel like – this is not related to the series, but I'm curious about what the biggest difference in covering Oklahoma State or OU and covering the Thunder is, because it seems like – I don't know. Is it – well, I'll leave it at that. What's the biggest difference in covering the college teams versus covering the pro team?
There's not a lot of difference because anymore now colleges are so closed off to where it almost feels like a professional environment. Like, we go in the locker room in the NBA. We don't even go in the locker room in college. which is fine with me. I don't really have any desire to do that anyway. It makes the interviews kind of worse, in fact, being in the locker rooms with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. But during the playoffs, it's much more organized. You know, it's press conference settings. But you have access to the Thunder every single day, and that's probably the biggest difference. Now, you don't really get a chance to get to know the guys. I feel like I get a better chance to get to know Gundy and the players at the college level than I do the NBA. Like, I've covered Kevin since his rookie year, or Russell since his rookie year, and Kevin since the first year being here. And I don't think they know who I am at all, which is fine. But it's just – it's totally different in that it's way more professional. There's way more media there, and it's way more closed off. So that's the biggest difference, I would say, is you don't get to know the guys as well.
It is weird, the locker room thing. I was just thinking about how funny would it be to have to go into like a golf locker room and interview a shirtless Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, it's very awkward. And like, for instance, like the way it works, like during the regular season with Kevin and Russ, you know, there's 25 people there waiting to talk to Kevin or Russell.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there at their locker getting dressed, but you have to kind of like, especially with a camera, you kind of got to like claim your spot, claim your turf to where you'll actually get a shot at them for the interview. And so that means you're literally standing at their locker while they're in a towel. It's super awkward. And I think it affects Russell more than anyone. I don't think he likes the media being in the locker room at all. He definitely doesn't like them being in his personal space while he's trying to get dressed. And I think that's why you've seen him get kind of, you know, crotchety sometimes during interviews. He's way better in a podium setting. So I would rather it be a podium setting. I don't want to be there standing next to Russ while he's in a towel. I think the interview would be much better at a podium, which it is in the playoffs. So it's just kind of like the way it's always been with the NBA. That's just kind of the policy they've had. But yeah. But back in the day, that wasn't a big deal because there was like 3 beat writers there, and that's it. Now there's freaking like 50 people in the locker room. So it's kind of a mess, but it's much better in the playoffs.
What's your take on – I feel like there's a lot of noise constantly surrounding the Thunder on Twitter and you know, Instagram, or social media generally. What is your take on – let's say the Thunder get past the Mavs, and then they get the Spurs in round 2. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So they get beat in, let's say, 6 by the Spurs, and then we get Spurs-Warriors for the Western Conference title. What happens in the offseason? Anything? Or is it just re-sign Durant for a year and run it back?
I think that's what they do. I don't think they have enough flexibility roster-wise or salary-wise to overhaul the roster, which I think is very damning and a huge issue, because you go up and down the Thunder roster, where are the good players? You have Kevin and Russ. You have Serge taking a massive step back this year. And then you have a hodgepodge of jabronis. I mean, Enes Kanter's a really good player, the only good player on the bench. Then you have Randy Foy, who's completely shot. You have Kyle Singler, who may be the worst player in the entire NBA. And you just don't have very much talent. That's a simple fact, is Sam Presti's done a bad job putting talent around these guys. And that's another issue in the last 5 minutes. Who are these guys going to pass to? You know, Steven Adams is another really good player. He's awesome. But In a tie game with a minute left, is Kevin and Russell, are they passing to Andre Roberson? No. Are they passing to Randy Foy? They shouldn't. He'll throw up a brick. So it's a huge issue in that they don't have any talent. Like, yeah. The Warriors are way more talented besides their stars. The Spurs are way more talented besides their stars. Now, what I want to see is someone like David West, who took a massive pay cut to join the Spurs. When is that going to start happening for the Thunder? When are people going to take pay cuts to play with Kevin and Russell? We have yet to see that.
Yeah.
And that to me is the biggest issue, is they just don't have any talent.
If you're Sam Presti, how much would you have to be paid to trade Kyle Singler to Japan for LeBron Nash?
I would do it tomorrow.
Just straight up?
Yes. I mean, the fact that Kyle's so bad is one thing. The fact that he signed him to a 5-year contract is another. Like, in, he was good in Detroit, but that's, you know, how many times have we seen a bad NBA player put up numbers on a bad team? That happens all the time, because NBA teams are going to get to 90 points. Someone's got to score those points.
Yeah.
We're seeing that with Ish Smith, former Thunder player, averaging like 17 for the Sixers, and he couldn't get on the floor for the Thunder. So I don't know what LeBron – is LeBron going to make it in the NBA ever? I mean, is he putting up numbers?
Yeah, he's averaging like 28 a game. Although somebody the other day broke down like international basketball for me, And apparently he's playing in, like, the third best Japanese league, which is, the 47th best league in the world. I don't know. It was, somebody, like, knew way too much about Japanese basketball.
Yeah, I think the better comp would be, can we get James Anderson over to Oklahoma City?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sort of surprised that, and I don't know how all of this works. LeBron Nash was a really, really good college basketball player. And he got kind of a bad rap just because of his attitude or his demeanor or whatever. I don't see how he's not like a D-League player, I guess. I don't know. Maybe like I'm way off on that.
He was one of the better OSU players ever. I mean, he had one of the best careers at OSU basketball. But what did he do well? He was a good post player, a good mid-range player. But at his height, what is he, 6'6" on a good day?
Yeah.
And that, you can't do that at the NBA level at 6'6". You're supposed to be a two guard at that height. You know, all the two guards of Thunder are 6'7", 6'6". So it's a size issue. He's a bit of a tweener, and that was always going to be his issue. And he wasn't as athletic as advertised. Like, he wasn't just jumping out of the gym everywhere. That's another issue. You got to be just a freak to play in the NBA.
Yeah.
Unless you're Kyle Singler. But Kyle Singler does things that LeBron doesn't, which is shoot from the outside.
Okay, we'll end on this. We'll save recruiting for another time.
Yeah, that works.
Speaking of shooting, because I know you got to go, but speaking of shooting from the outside, Marcus Smart, the worst three-point shooting season in NBA history. How do we feel about that? Does that bother you? Are you fine with it? Does Brad Stevens care? What are we doing here?
That's not something you want on your bio, for sure.
I mean, literally the worst 3-point shooting season in NBA history. It's not hyperbole.
Well, and that's something we saw in Stillwater, correct? I mean, he just kept firing up threes when that's not what he does at all. And I think it's shows you kind of the movement of the NBA, where they stress three-pointers. And even if you don't shoot a good percentage, they view those as better shots than a long two. And so clearly the analytics support Marcus having the worst three-point shooting season ever because he's still doing it. So,
well, I guess
I feel bad for him. I mean, that's not something you want to do.
Well, I don't really understand it because he took like 243s and he shot 25.3%. Which is 0.3% worse than Antoine Walker shot in 99-2000. Not somebody you want to be associated with.
No.
But he's so good at everything else that I don't understand the like why he's just so insistent on shooting from the outside. I don't understand it. Does he think that opens up his ability to drive? I've never gotten a real great explanation other than I think he thinks he's a good outside shooter.
Yeah, I think he thinks that he's better than he is, and the fact that the more you do it, the better you'll get at it, I guess, is the theory there behind it. But no, it's bad. I mean, he's so good at going to the rim. That's what I'd have him do.
Yeah. Marcus Smart, Antoine Walker, Josh Smith, Michael Carter-Williams, and Corey Brewer are the five guys with the – yeah, not a great list right there. But, I mean, I'm intrigued by – Smart's future because Boston has a really good nucleus and they've got obviously a great coach. If they can get a superstar somehow, I don't know how they're going to do it. They're going to be legit.
Yeah. Like, they got a lot of picks.
They're going to be, I think they could potentially be the team in the post LeBron Eastern Conference here in a few years.
Yeah, I agree. And what's crazy is they kind of own the Warriors.
Yeah.
They beat the Warriors in Golden State. They beat them in Boston, I think maybe last year. And they went down to the wire in Boston this year. So, like, they Smart, maybe the Curry kryptonite. So maybe if they get another star to go with them, maybe they'll meet up in the finals someday.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be fun. Okay, Carson, I know you got to go. We will be back later this week. We actually have I know we said this last week, but we actually do have a guest later this week. You're coming down to Dallas.
I'm coming down to Dallas. I leave Thursday. Game 3, Thunder Mavericks. I thought it would be 2-0 going down there, but we're 1-1, and I think Dallas will be fired up for that game. So, yeah, I'll be down there Thursday all the way through the weekend. So come say hey.
Yeah, we need to – I didn't even think about that, but we need to play
Studio
golf.
Pod?
Can you give any time off?
I'm going to be slammed. Yeah. I'm going to be really busy every day.
Studio Pod.
We could – We could do a hotel pod, maybe. invite Zach Robinson over. Maybe we can play nine. Maybe I can squeeze nine in.
That would be fun. Maybe we'll make that work. Okay, Carson, we will talk to you later on in the week, and be safe coming down to Dallas.
Sounds good.
Okay, bye.
See you.